This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Here we go then, Champions League quarter-final match day, baby. It's Wednesday the 17th of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Alex Michelle.
And this is the City Report podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Look at this, listeners. It is the Champions League quarterfinal and we've rolled out the Galacticos because Real Madrid must be in town. Ollie Kirsch and Alex Michelle on the mic for your match day preview. Ollie, I've had enough of you today. We've spent a good few hours together. We've been recording in the centre of Manchester with our friends from Brazil. Look at us, a Stockport and a Bury lad. How exotic.
I know, not bad that, is it? And also, I'm feeling a bit weird right now. I was on the show recording last night with Booker and he complimented me in the intro. And then we've come on tonight and you've complimented me. So I'm not, I don't know if there's some sweet talking going on here and you two are going to pull me into something I don't want to commit to and you're just kind of building me up softly to
it.
But not sure what's going on here.
Exactly. Well, there'll be no shit talking about Mr. Michelle. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. Can't wait for this. This is going to be cinema, I think is the only way to describe this, it.
Let's get into it because we come off the back of what can only be described as two sensational quarterfinal second legs. Barcelona 1, PSG 4, PSG win 6-4 in aggregate. Borussia Dortmund 4, Atletico Madrid 2. Borussia Dortmund win 5-4 on aggregate. Obviously 3-3 last week, Alex, in the Bernabeu. Is it going to be another classic?
I think so. I think whenever you get these two sides against each other, it is just the perfect style clash to result in an all-timer again and again. It seems like no matter who comes out on top, it seems like that's the way it goes. And I really don't expect anything different here. I don't think that there is any possible way that this match underwhelms, even given the lofty expectations going into it. I think it is just set up to be an absolute classic once again.
There's been a few of them, hasn't there? I guess depending on what side of the divide you're on, last season's second leg was a classic. If you were of a Madrid persuasion, probably not. But even before that, 4-3 in the first leg of the semi-final in 21-22. And Ollie, look, Pep has obviously had an illustrious rivalry with Real Madrid and the two, in a way, are kind of synonymous, at least sort of pre-Man City. Are we, I don't want to sort of jump the gun a little bit here.
Yes, we are bigger than Real Madrid.
There we go. Everyone, that is it. Thank you for listening to the City Report podcast. What I was going to say is, has Man City versus Real Madrid become the tie in Europe, like Barca Madrid was, like, I don't know, Liverpool AC Milan was, you know, that sort of prestigious fixture the whole world stops and watches.
Yeah, it really is, and it's quite weird to hear it. I've heard it on a few from a few different places over the last few days. It was on the commentary, I think, on BT or TNT, as it's now known, just before the first or during the first leg. You see it in newspapers at the moment, match previews. This seems to be becoming the classic Champions League tie, which is still quite hard for me to get my head around personally. You know, really? Man City and Madrid? Obviously, Madrid are the giants in Europe, but for us to be not only categorised as a European giant, but also for a tie of ours to be looked at as the modern-day classic Champions League matchup. Unbelievable. But yeah, I do think it is, of course. You know, we've been the dominant team in England over the last few years. Madrid have largely been the dominant team in Spain over the last few years. Madrid obviously had that fantastic run of three Champions Leagues in a row, and I think they picked one up since as well.
Picked a couple up, beating our friends from down the M62.
Yeah. And City, obviously, with the treble and picking it up last season with that game against Madrid. Last season, that's high. The season before with Madrid, that late heartbreak. It's the one that everyone's tuning into. It's the one that everyone's looking forward to. Everyone is climbing over each other to get tickets. I've got a lot of mates who aren't City fans that just want to be there. For the love of football, they just want to be there.
Same.
Stupendous. Crazy, but really, really quite hard to comprehend, I think.
Yeah, I think if you have a certain persuasion, it is something that is difficult to maybe get into that head of ours. But Alex, I guess in the football itself, is this the Champions League final by stealth? And I guess that's probably too early to say it in a quarterfinal. Last year, we could have probably said it about the semi-final, but Bayern Munich, Arsenal, they're going to pose the same threat. But there is a feeling, isn't there, that the winner of the competition will come from the winner of the tie at the Etihad tonight?
I think for a lot of people it is, but for me personally, not even close. And I think I'm most certainly in the minority when it comes to this, but hypothetically, if we were to get a semifinal against Arsenal, I'm not quite sure we are favorites by all that much. And that is mostly down to...
That would be a terrible, terrible draw for everyone. You talk about the football lovers, Jesus Christ, the football terrorists more like.
Exactly, yeah. It's the exact opposite of the City Real tie. It is, you know, order against order instead of chaos against order. And when you get those two sort of immovable objects coming up against one another, especially with how much Pep fears Arteta, it just does not scream, it doesn't scream too much excitement, in my opinion. It doesn't scream, you know, City are through quite easily, in my opinion. I don't even want to look that far ahead, but no, I think my short answer to that is there are still going to be challenges to face, even if we do come away with the win here.
Yeah, I imagine City versus Arsenal in the Champions League semi-final is like pairing a steak with a smoked salmon, in the sense that, like, what the fuck are you two guys going up against each other for?
You don't have a surf and turf, Amos?
A what now?
Surf and turf? You never had a surf and turf?
Well, as a bona fide vegetarian, I'm going to guess I'm out of that conversation.
You've definitely not had a surf and turf then. No, like steak and fish dish.
A steak and... They exist?
Yeah. Surf and turf.
Jeez. Anyway, interesting. Thank you, Anthony Bourdain. But Ollie Kirsch, how do you see this game playing out? Because look, we've just said that it has the makings of another classic. But in terms of the way Real Madrid set up, they're going to have learned from the mistakes, aren't they? Because in the last two trips to the Etihad Stadium, they've conceded four. They conceded three at home last week, and they had to go for it last week. They couldn't afford to take a 2-0 loss against Manchester City. In a way, you're probably looking at it going, it's a good result for both teams, and one that they'd have probably taken before the match had it been on the table. But I'm fascinated to see how Carlo Ancelotti sets up his side, because there is a bit of a joke that he shrugs his eyebrow and suddenly Vinicius Jr. is through on goal and you're 2-0 down, or you're knocked out or whatever. But there has to be a little bit more pragmatism, doesn't there, than the way they approached the game last year. That's obviously ignoring the fact City are fantastic and were fantastic.
Yeah, my first instinct when you were opening up with that question about learning from the mistakes, I'm not sure there was much for them to learn from last season. The only thing they learned from that City performance last season was there is a level that no other team on the planet can get to. And that was the level that City opened up in that game, in that second leg last season. If we come out like that, there's nothing they can do. There is nothing they can do. There's nothing no other football team in the world can do. And I'll say this, a lot.
Say 20 minutes, 25
yeah,
minutes,
say we don't.
Goes, and it's a bit sketchy. How are Real Madrid getting the better of City?
Well, to be honest, similar to the way that they approached the game at the Bernabeu. You know, they were quite solid at the back. Rudiger had the better of Haaland. They didn't let us, outside of the first 10-15 minutes when I felt we had some good control, they didn't really let us settle into our rhythm too often. And when we did, we kind of kept running into a brick wall. They looked very dangerous on the break. I think that's got a lot to do with Kyle Walker's absence as well. I think, to be fair, they set up about right at the Bernabeu, but there were screamers at both ends. There were lucky goals at both ends. You know, in a fair and just world.
Whoa, there was no lucky goals at City end.
No lucky goals at the City end. But in a fair and just XG-driven world, it might well have been a 0-0 very easily. I don't think they will be happy with that.
Terrible world. That's got to be Andrew Detmer. Yeah, there you go.
same time, same name. I don't think they will be happy with that, though. Mm. You do not want to go to the Etihad on level terms. Not at all. I think you've got to be, if you are at
the alternative is them getting blown away, which they didn't. That's why, I mean, they'll be satisfied in the sense that they're still in the tie, because it would have been easy for City,
of course,
on another day to have sort of maybe scored a couple.
Of course, but now they're looking at maybe pulling out a smash and grab, because generally, not even generally, objectively, factually, we don't and have not been hammered at the Etihad in a very long time. So they're now looking at a smash and grab instead of at the Bernabeu, where maybe they could have picked up a 2-0, a 3-1 if they'd really, really come out the blocks fast. So which way do I see it going? I think either it's going to be a high-scoring thriller or it's going to be a Madrid smash and grab. But of course, I'm optimistic. I think we're capable of anything at the Etihad, and I will go with the former.
Cool. Alex, we'll do the player talk, and we'll do the setup, and we'll do the tactics for City in part two, as usual. But I'm interested to see if you could sort of, I don't know, control the mysterious beings and the feelings and the sort of the vibes around this game. How much of the chaos meter, you can come up with your own sort of slang for that. How much chaos do you think Pep Guardiola wants to bring into this game? Because we've seen in the first set of second leg quarterfinals that Jesus Christ, this competition on its day can deliver madness. And City have kind of had to lean into that especially last year to go on and win the competition. It's a different story at home, though, isn't it, where City have generally been dominant and tried to control. Do they have to lean into that little bit of chaos again to get past the mystique of Real Madrid, 14 times winners?
That's a great question. And I think it does come down to, I don't want to jump the gun and like get in too deep to it, but it does come down to Pep's selection, because I agree with Ollie in the sense that I don't think Real Madrid have that much to improve on. I don't think that there's that much that they can do differently. And in that sense, we pretty much know what to expect from them. On the City side of things, though, if you look back at that 4-0 last season, there is no possible way we can do that again in the same fashion, simply because we don't have Ilkay Gundogan there who can play both roles on both sides of the ball. I look at this selection and just focusing on one portion of this in particular. If you start Kevin De Bruyne, Jack Grealish, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva as the four between Haaland and Rodri, then who is dropping back alongside Rodri out of possession? Is it Bernardo on that left side of midfield? It would seem so. But then at that case, you have Phil Foden out on the wing and he gets a bit sort of isolated out there, and that's not really what you want. And in the same token, you lose that physicality in midfield without Kovacic there. And so I think that is sort of the one extreme for City. I mean, I think playing De Bruyne and Foden through the middle would be the extreme, but we know that's likely not going to happen. I think this is the plausible extreme in terms of playing into chaos. And you look at the other option of potentially benching Grealish, potentially benching one of Foden or De Bruyne and putting Kovacic in that midfield to have that security, to have that physicality. And that for me would be the opposite end of the spectrum. That's the really going for the order and trying to bring in control. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Pep balances that, because there's one side of the coin that says, if you have all your best ball players, if you bench Kovacic and you play Bernardo and you have all your best ball players out on the pitch, then you can still control the game through possession. You can still control the game if you don't make those mistakes in midfield and lose the ball there. But at the same time, there's risk that comes with that. And on the other side of the coin, there is the approach where we're just going to be as solid as possible. We're going to try to mitigate the potential counterattacks that they have. And we are going to rely on the fact that they are going to give us the ball and give us the control. And we trust in, you know, our individuals, our Kevin De Bruyne's, our Erling Haaland's, our Phil Foden's to create those moments and really break through. So that's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's totally understandable, and we'll get more into that in part two. So listeners, stay exactly where you are for part two of the Match Day Preview.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Savour it, people. They don't come along like this all too often. Champions League quarterfinals against Real Madrid. Ollie, I guess for City, the selection problems, and we'll do a bit of Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden in the second half of this segment, but it starts at the back, doesn't it? And I think by the fact that Ederson started against Luton, that's maybe a peek behind the curtain that he's going to be back in for this game, unless Guardiola wants to go and say, Stefan Ortega, you're the cup keeper, Ederson, you're the league keeper. It seems unlikely, but you know, there's a tiny percentage chance that it could happen. We're going to say Ederson.
Yeah, Kyle Walker. Just on Ederson, because you made me recall, I think it was before the round of 16 tie when I predicted Ortega and I practically got laughed off the episode. And I wasn't right either. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, right, it was
Ederson started
Ederson
the Copenhagen
did
game.
Play, yeah. Copenhagen second tie. It's the same again. As in, my opinion will change. I think Ederson will start, and it's the same situation as last time. It's that if Eddie is available, he plays, full stop.
Yeah, I totally agree. But the defence is interesting here, because we saw Kyle Walker back on the bench against Luton, and it feels like Kyle Walker's doing that thing where he tries to be a hero a little bit, and look, he could go on and be the hero and we could all be lapping it up, and this is the sort of game you want him. But at the same time, is there a risk, Ollie, that if Kyle Walker isn't, I wouldn't even say he has to be 100% fit, if he's not 85, 90% fit, he could be harming City by putting his name down for selection, assuming that he is going to be sort of saying, yes, I'm fit, given the fact that he was on the bench against Luton?
Can he run? That's all I want to know for this. Can he run? Does he have 90% of his top speed available to him? If so, he's got to play.
Because Akanji's been incredible. Gvardiol's been incredible. Diaz, Stones are the centre back partnership for the treble win.
Do you reckon? Yeah. The only thing that that will be on Pep's mind, and it was a smart move by Ancelotti, was to switch Rodrigo and Vinicius. Vinicius was on their right. He was on our left in the leg at the Bernabeu. So what Pep could be thinking is, if Ancelotti's going to do the same thing again, then do we really need Walker? Because I think Akanji can do a fine job on Rodrigo. I know that's rich to say, given the goal. A couple of the goals were coming down from that flank, but it's not an easy call. It isn't maybe as straightforward a call as it was this time last season, when it was Vinicius will play down the left. We have a very, very, very fast Kyle Walker and fit Kyle Walker available to us. Play him. It isn't as straightforward. Off the back of an injury, the tactical changes that Ancelotti made, the potential complications, the form of those four that you named, Guardiola, Kanji, Diaz and Stones, it isn't all that straightforward. I'm, for once, going to actually sit on the fence and say I don't know, and it's not often I do that.
Ooh, look at that. Yeah. I think we call that character development.
you cheeky bastard.
Alex, I'm going to need an answer from you. So say in this hypothetical world, we've not got access to the Manchester City medical records, but let's just say Kyle Walker is 80% fit. Do you go with him, or do you keep the tried and tested from the last couple of weeks at a time when Whisper at City have started to, especially defensively, look a little bit sort of kind of back to the way they were last year? Obviously, Gvardiol's coming in, he's added a different dimension, but that's been working, hasn't it, with those guys in the back line?
It has, yeah. And regardless of the positioning of their attackers, they're pretty much going to force the ball down the left side regardless. I think if I pull up the report on who scored from the last game, I believe around 50% of their attacks went down the left third of their pitch, and the vast majority of their shots came from the same area in the box. I do think you have to start Kyle Walker here if he's fit. Not necessarily have to. I should take that back. I think Pep does, though. I think that's more what I'm getting at. He has just been trusted to play this sort of role, and you know, before he went on that run of starts at the beginning of this season, that was pretty much what we all sort of conceived him to be relative to this side. It was like, okay, once you get to these Champions League quarterfinals and semifinals, if you're facing Real Madrid or PSG, you start Kyle Walker, no questions asked. And I think there is a bit of a question mark around, you know, of course, his fitness, and then alongside that, as you mentioned, the form. But I don't think the latter part of that, the quote-unquote form aspect of it, is as important, because it's not really changing the structure at all. They're playing the same role. They're offering more or less the same qualities, and Akanji may be a bit better on the ball, Walker a bit better in transition and defense. But there really isn't all that much to change along, aside from the fact that, you know, Walker is out of rhythm a bit, and he doesn't really have that mental side to it. And Pep has talked about this a lot recently. I'm kind of shocked that he's talked about this so much. I feel like there have been four or five quotes on it just in the past 2 weeks alone. The sort of idea that he can look in a player's eyes and know if they're ready or not. And so I think
it's quite scary. It's a scary thought.
It really is. It's kind of psychopathic way. But I think that's really what is going to happen with Kyle Walker. I think today when they were in training, Pep will have been having his eye on him really closely and been seeing, you know, how is he carrying himself? Not just how fit is he, but how is he carrying himself? How is he leading this team as the club captain? How is he mentally prepared for this moment? And I think the same will happen tomorrow morning, most likely. I would assume that Pep does not necessarily have that decision 100% stamped out. I think there's probably something a bit up in the air for him, and a lot will come from just that sort of soul read of him looking into Kyle Walker's eyes.
Yeah, I agree. And look, if Kyle Walker was 100% fit, even a bit more than that, I'd be straight in my team. I just wonder, does it cause City problems, say, if he's a little bit undercooked, 20 minutes in, he has to come off and then suddenly the game plan's done and dusted. I don't know. That's a decision the manager has to take. Alex, I'm going to stick with you. I'm going to throw, considering Ollie's declared himself as the fence sitter in tonight's podcast, I'm going to chuck this bombshell at you. Would Pep Guardiola secretly wish that one of Kevin De Bruyne or Phil Foden was out injured? Because the question of them having to play in the middle together seems to be bogging him down a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's much easier if you have one of those two out of the equation. I think...
Which one would you pick? If you had to right now?
I'm sticking with Phil Foden personally.
Fair enough.
We can get into the reasons for that at a different time. But no, I think that you look at everything that has gone on, and this is really sort of the crescendo to this season almost, and all the narratives that have come up, because we've talked since day one about how Ilkay Gundogan leaving affects the structure of this team and the chemistry of this team. And I really think that Pep has never found the answer to that. And the answer that we've seen in recent weeks is that you start Kevin De Bruyne sometimes and it's his team, and then the next game you start Phil Foden and it's his team. But that doesn't give you an answer as to when you need to play them together in 190-minute match. And I think even then, we look at the Arsenal game, and that was the one moment this season, if I'm not wrong, in a big game where Pep has had his full choices of options, his full arsenal, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. He had his full choice, and he did find a way to put them into the middle together, but it didn't work. And he will have all these questions running around in his head, because it really is a difficult problem to solve. There is no correct answer here that I see. There's no sort of optimal approach here as we had last season. And I think that's really going to be the crux of this game is Phil Foden in the middle and Kevin De Bruyne is floating from flank to flank? Is Phil Foden playing right wing or left wing? Kevin De Bruyne is running it through the middle. Is one of them potentially benched in a shocker? I don't know. I think that is the one question that I'm really, really asking, and I don't really have an answer to.
I think it's got to be Phil that plays.
Kevin on the bench?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking.
I think I agree, but
I think we've got to
tell me why. If I'm not sort of convinced on this, you try and convince me. Even though I agree, tell me why you think that should be.
Firstly, for lack of a better option to drop, I think we need Grealish to be out on the left. We need Bernardo to be running up and down the right. We need Kovacic to give that extra body in midfield as we're moving up through the pitch, transitioning out, and on the defensive aspect as well. So that leaves two options to drop: Foden or Haaland, and revert to a false nine, which is never going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I wouldn't be opposed to it, but it's just not going to happen. So, no, not in the controversial way of, I want that.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
If Haaland disappeared off the face of the earth tonight and we were going in with a false nine against Madrid tomorrow, I wouldn't be too bothered, because it has its advantages against a team that does defend the way they do defend. The reason I would play Phil is Madrid, if they're going for a deep block and they're looking to break out of the lines very quickly, Phil is going to be more effective and more impactful in those tight spaces. Ultimately, that's where he's better. Receiving the ball on the half turn, driving up through a packed defence, finding an out ball, that's where he's better. De Bruyne is more effective when there's space to play around behind the defence with those incisive passes to Haaland, whether he's coming out from out wide in the half spaces. Where De Bruyne can make the impact tomorrow, I feel, is later on in the game, if the game is tight. Or say, you know, we're 1-0 up and it's the 60th minute, Madrid are starting to open up a little bit and push up the pitch. Then you get De Bruyne in to really capitalise on those counter-attacks. But ultimately, he's also a risk, I feel, in these kind of games where the opposition wants to counter-attack. Because he is so adventurous with his passing, and yes, he is capable of world-class passing. Alex is nodding. I'm quite glad that I'm clearly on the right lines here.
And Alex Michelle nod is like a Paul Hollywood clap.
Perfect. But it's true. You know, the De Bruyne is a riskier player as well with the final balls that he tries to execute. And you do that against Madrid in a dodgy area of the pitch, that is trouble. We've seen it. We saw it last week.
That's fine, isn't it? That's okay if he's the one guy doing it.
But the issue comes
when Phil Foden's trying to do similar stuff.
No, the issue is when you've got Vinicius Jr. waiting to receive the ball on the, after the turnover. That's the issue for me, anyway.
Because in this world, in my head, you would have Kevin De Bruyne playing that sole role, and you'd have a Kovacic, you'd have a Rodri, you'd have a John Stones behind him, and then maybe a Kyle Walker. My point being that when you have two guys in that position as the risk takers in a game like this, the risk by its nature multiplies.
Yeah, it can't be done.
We're getting to the same point, just at different.
Yeah, it can't be done. That brings me back to the earlier point of you can't drop Kovacic for this game. It has to be, I think, unless Pep's got something up his sleeve, it has to be Phil.
It's Champions League game, so he probably does.
Well, yeah, maybe. But it has to be Phil or De Bruyne, and I think Phil is better suited to at least start the game and play the way we want to play, and play in a way that isn't going to open us up to jeopardy in the first 15, 20 minutes, you know, even first 10 minutes, right? The last thing we want is our very first attack and the ball comes up the other end. I think Phil is better placed to start the game. And then if the game opens up later on because it's tight or, you know, it's 1-0 either way, etc., that's when you chuck Kevin De Bruyne in. And it pains me to say it because it's Kevin De Bruyne, for fuck's sake. I never, ever, ever, ever envisioned that I'd be sitting here ahead of a quarterfinal, Champions League quarterfinal clash, saying Kevin De Bruyne should be on the bench. But kudos to Phil Foden. Phil is the reason that we're having this discussion, the form that he's been in this season. So I just think tactically, tomorrow it is better suited to Phil. But I'm not paid whatever Pep Guardiola has paid to make those decisions. And it's the same with the right-back problem. There's two major sticking points for that lineup tomorrow. I think the other nine probably right themselves.
I think that's fair. Quickly then, Alex, before we get out of here, Erling Haaland, does he need a big game? I mean, the answer is obviously no to us intellectuals, but for the wider narrative, for the wider world, with the eyes of the world watching him, does Erling Haaland need to pop up with a goal? Not even a winning goal, just a goal in one of these big matches?
I don't think so. I think you can let those people talk. I don't think it is too relevant for City as long as we come away with the win here. And I do, if I can. I want to roll it back real quick here and give my two cents into something, because I just want to offer up one other possibility, because I completely agree with Ollie in the sense that, you know, Kevin De Bruyne is that risk taker, and that is very, very, you know, again, it goes on that scale of chaos to order. That is on the side of chaos when it comes to this team. One little thing I want to add in, just a tidbit real quick, that has been itching at my mind, is against Luton, and yes, it is Luton, they were in shambles regardless, Kevin De Bruyne had 92% pass accuracy. That is, I think that's the highest I've seen from him in like three seasons.
He's usually in the 70s.
He was the lowest of any City player last season, right around 70%. So that is, that makes me, you know, raise my eyebrows a bit. He was dispossessed zero times. And again, it's Luton, but we know that Pep uses these games just before these big ties to just work on these little details. We saw it with Alvarez left wing before he played there against Liverpool. Yeah. I'm just wondering, is that something that...
Are you saying the Kevin De Bruyne deeper arc is on its way?
Potentially. The one other thing I want to add is, and I referred to earlier in the pod that I said that, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden are not going to play through the middle. I was just thinking through things a bit there as Ollie was talking, and I think if there was ever a moment, this is the time where you play both of them through the middle together. And the reason for that is the argument to play Kovacic in midfield is, first of all, his physical stature, which Phil can't, he'll never match that. But the other thing is for him to, you know, act on that left side of midfield and stop those counterattacks. Because Real Madrid focus so much on the other side of the pitch, is there really a need for it? Is there really a need for that left-sided center mid to have that quality to them? In the last game, Kovacic had two interceptions. He had one block, and that was about it in terms of, like, of course, it's not everything shows up on the stat sheet, but that was about it in terms of his like defensive involvement in the middle third. So I'm just wondering, is there the potential where Pep just goes sort of balls to the wall and says, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to play them through the middle together this first time. We are going to blitz them. Because I also want to, one final thing that I wanted to say is like the first 20 minutes of this match is crucial because Real Madrid will be very timid. We saw that in the first leg. They sit back a little bit in that first 15, 20 minutes. It happened last season when we got that early goal. It happened again. I think it's a possibility more than I thought coming into the show. And honestly, I think it's something that
devil's on your shoulder, Alex. It's the devil on your shoulder. It's just not sensible.
But that's the devil. That's the devil on Pep's shoulder. And if there's one man who's going to whip out what is everyone has been saying is his trump card and has to happen, and he's two most creative, most influential, most sexy players, it will be in a quarterfinal game.
The only thing, sorry, this is the final point. This is the fella
who sat there before Barcelona. Barcelona went to the Nou Camp and wrote in his little notepad with his little glass of wine that Lionel Messi's going to play false nine. This is the guy who did that. Yeah. If he's going to do it, it's going to be on this stage.
The only logical route I can think of to that is if Kyle Walker is fit enough to protect us on the transition. Mm-hmm. Let us play a little bit of a more risky game going forward with both De Bruyne and Foden, lose that body of Kovacic in the middle and have Kyle Walker on the cover. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But still not,
what about
not my preferred approach. Sergio Gomez. I'd be happier if I saw him at the hot dog bar outside the ground 10 minutes before kickoff, to be completely honest.
The disrespect.
I love the kid, but this ain't his level. I love the kid, but it's not his level. With all the respect in the world. I will always back him, and if he started tomorrow, I'd back him to the hilt. But it's just not his level. I think he has a place in this squad, just not in a Champions League quarterfinal second leg against Real Madrid.
How the hell this ended up with Sergio Gomez, I'll never know.
just juicy. One day we'll get him, kid. One day we'll get him. Okay, listeners, that'll do. Alex and Ollie, that'll do. Thank you very much. I'm getting excited now. It feels like the juices are there. The Champions League, play the music and all of that. Should be a good one down at Stade de Etihad. So we'll see. Look, we could be coming on here after the game and saying, oh God, what a shit show that was. We could be saying, what another fantastic win against Real Madrid. But guys, thank you. Listeners, thank you. Until next time, hopefully tomorrow with smiles on our faces. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you later.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.